This is a podcast for Radio Sangam, the number one followed Asian community radio station in the UK.
So, welcome back to the Culture Pot, the show, as my son says, that celebrates the music, the culture and the people of the world. And thank you very much for Saeed's wonderful Pashto show. Lovely man, Saeed. He always greets me really nicely when we get here. Saeed, I hope you can listen in for a little bit. Lovely to see the wonderful Janet as well. So, last week we spoke to Gary King, who was talking about how difficult it is to start a new business and why a lot of people fail, 95% of people who start, in fact, and some of the mental health issues that people get during that struggle. On Thursday this week, I'm interviewing Gina Miller. If you don't know who Gina Miller is, Gina Miller is the one who challenged the government after the 2016 EU referendum. And it's because of her that we had to have a meaningful vote through Parliament for any deal that took place. So it's quite good timing to be talking to her now. So I'll be speaking to her on Thursday, and all being well, I think we'll actually play that show next Sunday. But for the moment, I've got a very special guest. I was supposed to have two guests this week, as a matter of fact. You know, times are changing at pace, and I think for the better. Once upon a time, if you were a gay person, you'd be called all kinds of names at school, or you would try your best, you know, to sound as macho as possible or to act as feminine as possible. A boy who was effeminate would be called a sissy. A girl would be called a tomboy. And on a lot of the comedy shows, anybody who didn't fit the norm in terms of male or female behaviour was openly ridiculed. That's the society we live in, or we lived in then. And, you know, times are supposed to have changed. And I think that's a good thing. And times have also changed in terms of how we identify ourselves in terms of gender. And I'm no expert on this, by the way. I intended to bring an expert in to talk and to dispel some of the myths that are out there. You know, people talk about political correctness gone wrong and all the rest of it. You know, in my mind, if somebody decides that they want to change their gender from male to female, it's not going to affect me. I haven't got any problem with it. Some people do, and some people feel as though these issues are rammed down their throat. So my intention today was to have somebody who could talk about these issues in an educated way. I have got somebody very special for you, though. And her name is Emma Preston. And she's going to describe her own story of, you know, gender reassignment, because she was born in 1966, I believe. She might correct me on that. So we're not talking about some youngster who has decided they're going to get all confused because our society has become more permissive. This is somebody who knew from a very early age that she, you know, she wasn't feeling the way society was telling her she was supposed to feel. So with that, I'm going to bring her on. Her name is Emma Preston. Emma, thanks very much for making the effort to be here, at least by phone today.
Hi, how are you doing, Martin? You all right?
I'm great. You know, I think we should start just by, you were going to come in today and see us in person. Tell us why you weren't able to drive in today.
Well, I had my windows in my car smashed, and although nothing can be definitely proved, unfortunately, I've also had some rather nasty letters, two of them, through my door, telling me that I'm not welcome in the area because of the kind of person who I am. And there's quite clearly a link, because there was loads of cars parked all together, but it was just mine, a very old battered 54 plate Peugeot that got his windows put in, and it just seemed very strange. So yes, I wasn't able to drive on the motorway today.
And that wasn't the first even putting aside the letter that came in your door, that wasn't the first abusive act that happened to you last week, was it?
No. Actually, in total, there was three. I do get quite a bit of different situations during the week, but there were three not very savoury ones that, you know, for me, unfortunately, Martin, it's become normality. But, you know, who wants to walk out the door accepting that people are going to insult you or ridicule you or just laugh in your face just for being who you are? You know, you want to step out your door and just be you, don't you?
I think so, and I think if somebody is happy within themselves to be who they are, I'm happy to be who I am, then I shouldn't really have an issue with the person across the road who wants to be who they are.
Absolutely. And, you know, for example, last week I was just walking to work one morning. It was 20 past 8 in the morning, and there's people around, but I was just walking up one of the walkways up to my store in Burnley, and somebody comes out of one of the local bakeries, bumps straight into me, turns round and just shouts loads of transphobic abuse at me in front of about 6 or 7 other people. Mm-hmm. Another time, somebody's just driving, I'm walking up to my car, it's one of the bright days, it was very cold, but the sun was out, just walking up, and as this transit van's coming around the corner, the guy decides to roll down his window in the passenger seat and just hurl abuse at me just because he could, and it just seems a bit harsh to me.
And it seems very cowardly as well, coming from somebody who presumably thought he was really alpha male in the process. And this is the thing that you and I have been discussing, and I think it's really important for you to come on the show today, because when I look at people out there, you know, the vast majority of people who I'm connected with, in real life and on social media, if that's not real life, are all really, really good people, yeah?
Yes.
But what I've found from looking at people's attitudes is there's an awful lot of good people who might not have as much understanding or as much direct experience in terms of knowing people who are non-binary or transgendered, for example. And they have, in their hearts, real concerns. So, for example, some of the things that I've heard are, you know, look, there's two sets of genitalia, therefore there's two genders, male and female, and that's it. Now, I did a little bit of research, by the way, over the weekend.
Yeah.
And discovered, I didn't want this to be me saying this because I might look biased, but throughout history in many, many cultures, it's been recognised that there's more than two gender repeatedly. It's not a given that we just have male and female. So, for example, the North American Native Indians, if you like, the indigenous people, recognised that there was people who had two spirits. You know, there were male people who had a male spirit and a female spirit, and they were revered. And this is all around the world you see this. Historically, we've also seen the gender roles have been different. We've seen societies where the women were the warriors, where the women were in charge and they made the decisions. So this does seem to point towards what the experts, if we're allowed to talk about experts in this day and age, who say that gender is a social construct. That's the bottom line.
I hear every word that you're saying, Martin. I mean, you and I have talked on many occasions now, and, you know, I've made it very, very clear that I'm no historian. I don't know any percentages. I don't make up percentages. I don't even know all of the different labels and terminology, because I don't need to. All I need to know is who I believe I am, who I know I am, and who I want to live out my life as. And I'm extremely comfortable with who I am. And because of that, when somebody vilifies me or ridicules me, do you know what I do, Martin?
Yeah.
I forgive them. I just forgive them, because if I didn't, I'd never be able to get on with my life. I expect it, but I don't just necessarily put up with it. And I'm sure we'll talk about that over the next hour and three quarters or whatever it is. But I forgive Martin, mm-hmm. because I feel like, you know, these people are misguided. They may just don't understand. Maybe they just don't want to understand. But it's not for me to push that on people. And I don't want to do that today either. All I want to do is to share my experiences, because I am incredibly responsible when it comes to the words equality, inclusion and diversity. And whilst we're talking about that, whether it be because of race, religion, creed, colour, sexuality or gender, you know, the fact is whilst we're talking about it, it exists.
Yeah.
So I will stand up for the rights of transgender, but I will stand up for the rights of gay and lesbian. I will stand up for the Asian community, and I will stand up for any other community, because that's the responsibility that I've got, and that's why I'll always forgive people who insult and hurt me.
That's fantastic. And my aim today, even if people go away and they still don't understand or even feel a little bit alienated, if we can present Emma Preston, the human being, so that they can live and let live a little bit easier, then that'll be a result. And before we play your first track, by the way, which is Supersonic by Oasis, I'm going to put something else in. There's a lot of people who feel as though they're having stuff inflicted on them. I've heard talk about 70 different pronouns and political correctness gone mad. But if these things are true, which I don't believe they are, by the way, it's very easy to speak in gender-neutral language. Sometimes the press is twisting things to make it look like people like you are trying to inflict stuff on us when you're not. And I'll tell you what, we're going to go to Supersonic Oasis now, Supersonic by Oasis. And after that, there'll be some ads. And then I'll tell you about a story in the press before we get on with your story, okay?
And I just want to say that it's the first two lines that say everything with that for me.
Okay, here we go.
You're listening to your local Asian community radio station, 107.9 FM.
So welcome back to the Culture Pot. My guest today is Emma Preston, who is a transgendered lady from Lancashire. I always go to say Preston because it's in the name, but I don't think she is from Preston. You can hear her giggling in the background there. So before we go to Emma's childhood and we talk about her life and you know, how she's got to where she is today, and we share her experiences, one of the things I mentioned before the adverts was that I think there's an awful lot of fear and lack of understanding about the whole gender issue. There's an awful lot of assumptions that go on from people because, you know, in the past, these issues were not spoken about. And, you know, I want to give you an example. I saw an article shared on social media yesterday about a situation in Aldi. Now, first of all, I'll tell you the reality of the situation. Aldi had decided that the mother and child sign that they had on some of their car parking spaces, and please do note, Aldi had decided that those signs were not representative of all the people who might come with a child. There's people like me, for example. I drive around with my son all the time, father and son, and there's also non-binary people. You know, so what happened was that a lady had tried to park her car, found that there was two workmen doing this job. Again, this is Aldi. They've got these guys doing the painting job, you know, during working hours, which has annoyed this person. And this lady said, you know, what are you doing? And they've turned around, and I'm quoting exactly what they said here. They turned around and said, well, we've been asked to paint it because, you know, that sign, you know, not everyone's a mother with a child. There's men out there with their kids, and there's non-binary. So please notice they mention the men first. She's then done a social media post. describing, you know, everyone as snowflakes, which in my mind is a term. If I go up to you and insult you and call you names and you complain, I'll say you're a snowflake. I really haven't got any time for stuff like that where people are just dismissing others by saying the snowflakes. So she's written a post about it on social media that's gone viral, and it's ended up making it to national press. By the time it's got to national press, it's Aldi are now making their car parking spaces gender neutral because of non-binary people. So now all the annoyance and the anger and the frustration goes towards non-binary people, although no non-binary person or male like me who goes around with this child in the car has complained about those car parked parking spaces and how they're labelled. So this is what I'm trying to get across. Let's spend the rest of this show talking to somebody who really is transgendered and get to know them, because I think that that will be a lot more fruitful than just reading articles that are being twisted to create distrust, hatred, in my opinion, and marginalisation of people. Emma, thank you for coming on the show today.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
So I've made my point. I want to do less talking now for the rest of the show. I want us to share you and your life.
Right.
Did I get it right when I said 1966?
Yes, unfortunately you did. I would prefer to say it was 21 years ago, but no, it was 1966.
We all would, Emma. Believe me, we all would. But let's not be ageist, yeah?
Absolutely.
As Richard Gere says, you know, we should celebrate being old. It's a privilege. Older.
He says, hang on a minute, I'm not old. I'm
old. So,
right.
Emma, go back to your earliest memories and share them with us.
Yeah, so, you know, let me start by saying that I had two very beautiful parents. They were fabulous. And I had a wonderful childhood, Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But by the age of about maybe six, maybe seven, and in my book I talk about it being seven because I don't want to overestimate, I started realising that I didn't feel like I fitted in with what should have been normal. I enjoyed playing football. I enjoyed going around and, you know, jumping between the back gardens of people and the, you know, trying to get from one end of the street to the other. And I enjoyed getting mucky. Loved playing army, scatter, you know, all these games I loved. But then that's just being a kid, isn't it? My problem was that inside my head, I just didn't feel right. There was something that was blocking me. All of my friends at the time, well, most of my friends were girls. I couldn't get my head around that. But I had no point of reference, though. I just thought I was a bit odd, and I just didn't understand what was going on. And that continued for a long time. My parents never knew a thing. All the way through my childhood, they never knew anything. And then at the age, well, towards the end of my primary school years, something happened with a couple of girls at the pantomime where I ended up putting on one of the girls' pantomime fairy godmother dresses. And I sort of never looked back. I realised that I was dressing in the wrong clothes. But back then, Martin, had I said anything, I'm quite sure that I would have been ostracised by my male buddies, and I would have been laughed at, ridiculed, and insulted. And so I just kept it to myself. So it was a secret that I had. It was a difficult time because it was like living a smoke and mirrors, a bit of a cloak and daggers lifestyle where I would dig into the underwear drawers and the washing and dig out my mum's bra and knickers. And I know it sounds horrid and a bit like not very clean, but that's what I had to do because I needed to fulfill a requirement in my head that said things weren't right, but I had no idea what the problem was.
Emma, I'm going to cut in here with a question, by the way, I'm just letting you know, we're going over your next track, which is Foreign and Cold as Ice, because I just feel as though we're in the midst of something here.
Yeah.
the issue when it comes to cross-dressing, right? And I think our audience needs to understand this. This is different than somebody who cross-dresses for kicks.
Yes.
And really, it's not the clothes that matter. It's the fact that you look around you, or you looked around you as a child and saw the way you were feeling, the gender you were feeling, was associated with those clothes. Am I right?
Totally. I just didn't fit in. Mm. But when I... And actually, Caitlyn Jenner sums it up in a way, in that she says, when you looked in the mirror and you can't, you don't recognise what is looking back at you until you do something about it. And I was just the same. I just felt like putting a pair of underpants or boxers on just didn't feel right. What it was I was conforming, and I was doing what society expected me to do. And I needed to look in the mirror and see somebody looking back at me that I recognised. And the difference is that, you know, a cross-dresser will wear clothes to enjoy a bit of freedom, but is quite happy to go back to their regular life, if you will, and gets their sort of... I suppose you could argue kicks. I don't know what you want to call it, but it just releases the pressure and the burden, because it is pressure. It builds up when you don't get to do what you want to do in life, doing anything. The pressure builds up, doesn't it, Martin?
Well, absolutely, because one of the things that we talk about all the time, Gina, I've forgotten her surname, you put me in touch with her, Gina Bass. Yeah, she was going to come on today. She's an expert in a consultant for organisations and companies to be able to accommodate people who are not necessarily cisgendered. And she's writing a book at the moment about being authentic. You came to me originally through my friend Richard McCann, who
yes.
tells people how to find their I can mentality by being themselves.
Yes.
I think that all the psychologists are agreed that to live a lie is one of the most difficult things you can do. It's going to lead to depression and an upset, because you're not fulfilling your reason for being here. And this is why I want to support you, because if that's how
one of the things you've just said there, lies, part of my talk, because I've now stepped onto the professional speaking circuit because of people like Richard, Jeannie, and also another lady called Taz Thornton. One of the things I talk about is about that I cheated my way through life, Martin. Mm-hmm. I lied my way through life, and I hurt a lot of people. And, you know, I want to tell people that, because it's part of my journey, and it's the crushing reality of what a lot of transgender people go through. What I don't want to do today with all of your wonderful listeners is I don't want to make it sound like I bang on about this all the time. Actually, I don't. My talk is more about being yourself and looking after yourself so that you're in a position to look after others. I don't constantly, and I think you know this, I do not constantly go on about being transgender, but you wanted to give that opportunity. And I did cheat my way through life, Martin, and I did lie to a lot of people, especially my girlfriend and then wife, and I know we'll talk about that soon. And a lot of my friends and my family I've desperately hurt in the past. And, you know, I am sad about that, but I can't regret it for too long, because if I regret it for too long, I can't get on with the rest of my life. And hopefully I've got another at least 48 years ahead of me. So, yeah, it's been tough, Martin, really tough.
But I think also once truths are told, and we get back onto a path of truth. Yes, we acknowledge that a lot of hurt has happened, but things can only get better once we turn around and acknowledge that we've lied or that we've hurt others.
100%, yeah.
So you know, you can't go back, and you can't turn the clock back. At this point, because you've mentioned a few things, I just want to let there's about a million people listening to us at the moment, so you know, I didn't want to freak you out too much.
Thanks.
You know, because we're the UK's most followed Asian radio station. We've got listeners everywhere. I know that we had 250,000 downloads of our app in China, believe it or not. But, you know, I just want to say at this point, you were very successful as a man. And I know you're going to be talking about this anyway. You lost a lot when you made the decision to follow your authentic self. And now you're kind of getting yourself back on your feet, because I know you've written a book. I've read the first two chapters, called Being Transgender. You're also a professional speaker as well, and I think that you're going to do well with that, but it certainly hasn't been easy. And you've got, is it two wonderful kids as well?
Yes, I have. Yeah, they're beautiful children, and incredibly, incredibly supportive of me. Still call me Dad, because I don't want to be called Mum, Martin. They have a wonderful mum, a very caring mum, and I don't want to replace her. I'll probably end up as a grandma, but I don't want to be called Mum. That's not my job. My job is to be their dad. And I know that, in a way, there will be people out there, there will probably be some of the listeners listening in that think, well, hang on a minute, you talk about female, but you're prepared to use the word dad. Yeah, I am. And it's just, that's something that just is personal to me.
You don't have to justify those sorts of decisions. And this is what I'm saying. It's other people who've created a problem and implied there's some kind of major problem. Like you and I were discussing on the phone today, there's a difference between calling somebody by a different gender than how they identify, because you're confused or it's new to you, and doing it to deliberately hurt them. But look, we are going to play a track. I'm going to play your track that you've given us, House of the Rising Sun by The Animals.
Ah, great, yeah. Good song. Back here,
about
the first time I heard that, my dad introduced me to it, so it means a lot to me.
Okay. Milane wala. Welcome back to the Culture Pot. For our non-Urdu speaking friends who might be listening in today, because I know that there's a lot of people on my social media who wanted to hear this discussion. Dilanko Mulane Vala means bringing hearts together. So I hope that we're achieving that today. Your children call you dad, and I can perfectly understand you going along with that. You know, that's your personal relationship with them. So I want you to, I know you're taking hormones now, by the way. When I'm talking to you, when I hear your voice, I hear somebody who fits the bill. You sound effeminate. Everything about you sounds like a woman. Before the hormones, were you having to act, or did anyone looking at you as a kid or hearing you as a kid, would they have thought you sounded quite effeminate?
Are you talking after I started the transition, or are you talking before?
Go on. What I'm asking is, before the hormones, and if you didn't sound effeminate, was it because you weren't effeminate without the hormones, or was it because you were acting to play up to being a male person?
Got you. No, totally understand. I was often called a bit flowery and quite effeminate. My voice has never been deep, and I have worked on it to raise it up somewhat, because if you said Emma Preston was on your show and I talked, say, 3 years ago, it wouldn't have worked, because my voice was what you would consider more of a male-levelled voice. But before then, I was considered quite effeminate and quite soft, and my gestures were very effeminate as well. I didn't behave in a particular way. It was just me. It was just the way that I carried myself. Most of my friends throughout my entire life have always been female. I suppose you are always influenced by society. And if my society was the female world, then I'm going to have been influenced by that side of my life, aren't I?
Exactly, yeah. So going back to, I know you said to me that your wife was aware that you were cross-dressing for a good 10 years.
Yeah.
But she thought it was just something, you know, you'd dabble into, you'd do it, but you, you know, you were still your husband. And you were always straight, weren't you? You were always, you know, you said to me you were a heterosexual man.
Yeah, I just need to correct one little bit that I never thought of myself as a man. I always thought of myself as having to live in a male body.
Yeah.
And to me, there is a big difference. And that, if we were to talk about that, Martin, it would take us another 2 hours. But that is just the way I was. But my wife knew I cross-dressed, yes. But I've got a feeling from conversations I've had with her that she knows that it was absolutely hardwired. And it was actually my wife that called time on me and asked me a direct question. And then I opened up, and that was on the 7th of September 2014. And she just literally asked me, are you telling me everything about cross-dressing? Because it doesn't seem to me that you are. And I had to make a decision on that day. Do I tell the truth or do I lie? But up to that point, yes, I was acting as what would be considered a heterosexual male behavior. I love females, and I've always been in love with the female side of life.
Yeah, and that's something else that a lot of people don't understand. I think a lot of people confuse gender with sexuality.
All the time. And that is for me, Martin, you have just hit on almost one of the most pivotal points of the whole issue, because it is at the moment one of, other than Brexit, of course, it is one of the single biggest talking points in society at the minute is the world of transgender. And people mix up sexuality and gender all the time.
Yeah, because not only were you attracted to women before, but you're still attracted to women now, aren't you?
Always and forever.
Yeah. Okay. So when you were with your wife, how did she find out that you were cross-dressing in the first place? Was that something that you told her? I know you said that she called you out on being transgendered. But how did it happen that she found out you were cross-dressing? What sort of experiences?
Because I told her. I was absolutely brilliant at hiding my secret. I mean, to the point of military precision. Again, I talk about it in my book. I even have a whole chapter of how to live the secret world of a cross-dresser. And it's a chapter dedicated to saying you have to do this and you have to do that and, you know, military precision stuff. However, one day, I just knew that I simply had to tell my wife. And I'll be honest here, I knew that I was putting my marriage at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Because she could have easily flipped out and decided to walk away from the whole thing. But I just knew I needed to. And fortunately, she understood. And she accepted it. Difficult with difficulties, Martin. I mean, it's not easy when somebody says, "Oh, by the way, I want to wear a frock," when it's your husband.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I did, pretty much. And she was brilliant. She really was. And my wife is wonderful. And you know, I can't believe what I put her through and what she put up with.
Yeah, you know, for my mind, and I think I said this to you on the phone. Anybody would have a right to feel a certain way if they've been married to somebody and they found out that. So I think to some extent it was no wonder that the marriage broke down in the end, but there's more potential for you both now to have a genuine, true relationship based on reality.
Totally, Martin. Yeah, you've summed that up nicely.
Okay, so I know I said that you were in a really good job before. Did you say to me you were in some kind of engineering job?
No, not in engineering, no. I've been a retailer all my life, and I'm mm-hmm. back in retail now. However, I went into hospitality, and I was sort of area and operations manager for a chain, mainly based in the Northwest, but we did go national. And it was exciting times. The company was rapidly expanding, and I was very well paid, had a wonderful car, and I was living the life. And then suddenly a lot of things all went wrong, behaviors changed, I ended up in I ended up having to go pretty much, well, self-employed. Mm-hmm. And it was not a good time, because the company that I was working for
Let me interrupt for a second. In a couple of minutes, you see, we're going to be going to the breaks before the news.
Oh, yes.
And I want us to sort of like get to rock bottom, if you like, but start talking about that unravelling of your life, if you like, after the news. But this is a good opportunity to say to people now, look, it's not a call-in show. Some of you might be shocked by what's being said. You might be shocked after the news when we go deeper into the story. And whatever happens, you know, today's about sharing experiences and increasing understanding. So please do message in. You can either text or you can WhatsApp on 07444 202155. That's 07444 202155. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know your opinion. If you've got a question for Emma, that's fine as well. You know, I will put it to her. So Emma, when you say that things change then, and your situation changed, was that as a direct result of, you know, you making a decision to come out as a transgendered person, if that's the right way of putting it, or has something else happened?
Some of it was, without a doubt. Not all of it, but some of it.
What year are we talking about here?
2014, okay. 2015, kind of. It was about 2015, and behaviours towards me changed dramatically, and also the owners got greedy, basically, and I started being ostracised quite a lot. I started being used and abused quite a lot. Not physically abused, I mean abused in business.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up cutting me loose without any severance pay. I lost my final 3 months' pay. And when you're on a high wage, you live a higher lifestyle, but that money just immediately disappeared. I ended up using all of my life savings to try and survive, because people perceived me differently. And I wasn't different, Martin. You know, if I slit my wrists, I'm sure I bleed the same colour blood and the same blood that I had before I started transitioning.
Okay.
But for some reason, behavior changes towards you.
Emma, on that note, we've got to go to the ads, and then I think we're going to go through to the news, so we'll see everyone around 5 past.
Wonderful.
इतनी देर से मार्केट में ढूंढ रही हूँ कोई सस्ता और अच्छा सोफा बेड या फर्नीचर नहीं मिल
The culture and the people of the world. I've got a fantastic guest that you just joined us, and she is Emma Preston from Lancashire. Where about in Lancashire you're from, Emma?
Blackburn,
okay.
Yes.
So, for those who have just joined us, Emma is a transgendered female, so she was originally identified as a man. If you have been listening or you feel like getting in touch with us, I've said before, you can text us on 07444 202155. You can also WhatsApp us on the same number, or you can call in. You won't be able to speak to me, but you can call in and let us know your questions and feelings on 01484 817705. And that's Radio Sangam. So Emma, you'd had a great life. Your childhood, despite how you were feeling, your childhood was good. You know, you had a wonderful girlfriend who became a wife, and you've got two wonderful children, and you had a good job. You were doing very, very well. And then things really hit the skids, not only because there was some politics going on in work, from what you've said.
Yeah.
But also the fact that you then came out, if that's the right expression, around 2014, 15, and said, look, I'm now going to live my life as a woman. that didn't help. But the thing is, and it's something that you and I have discussed earlier on, is that had you been a male model on the front cover of Men's Health, then you changing your gender would be relevant, arguably. Yeah, you know, unless of course became a God's gift as a woman as well. But doing the jobs that you were doing, your gender was completely irrelevant, wasn't it? Completely irrelevant.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the long and short of what you're asking is, it was totally and utterly irrelevant. There was nothing I did in my previous life that I can't or don't or won't ever do in my current life. And to be honest, it wouldn't have mattered if I was female and wanted to transition to male. There was nothing I was doing that would have got in the way.
Okay, but yet, since then, since you made that decision late 2014, early 2015,
correct. Yeah, it was September 7th, 2014, when my wife challenged me and asked me, am I telling her everything? And then it was in October, I had my first psychology meeting, and then it was December the 9th, 10th, when I took my first hormones, and then started transition from January the 1st, 2015.
Okay, now I know that I said to you that some of the questions around transgendered issues I was going to leave for Gina Bathai to talk about, either this show or when she can come in. You mentioning a psychologist makes me think there's a good question you can answer here now, because there's a few fears, if you like, that there was a few friends of mine who said, I think one of them said, look, in my mind, I'm live and let live, and if somebody wants to say that they're a woman when they look like a man or vice versa, that's fine. But shouldn't we be addressing any psychological issues that they might have first before we just jump in the deep end and say that they're transgendered? Let's get to the bottom of this now.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you can't just go to your doctor on a whim and say, oh, I feel like a man or a woman, and that's it. They will grill you thoroughly to get to the bottom of this. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%. You're absolutely right. So, you're correct. You can't just go into your doctor and just say, oh, by the way, can I swap sides? It doesn't work like that, Martin. No, I must be on my 10th meeting with Gender Clinic. I've got another meeting in February, where I've got to go up to Leeds to Newsome House, and I've had to talk to many people, go to the doctors on numerous occasions, and your whole psychological stability is tested and checked. You're checked for suicidal tendencies, because few people know that within transgender, it's one of, if not still the single highest rate of suicide attempts and suicides of any of the social classes that you'll ever come across. And you are tested to the nth degree. It is not just a case of walking in and saying, I'm swapping sides. No, not at all.
Okay, that's really, I'm glad that we've hit that, because the other thing is that the people who are suicidal will tend to be suicidal because of the difficulties that go with the territory. And I think that what I'm getting at here is somebody deciding that they want to change their gender, if that is the result of some kind of nervous breakdown, some kind of Reggie Perrin moment, for those who used to watch Rising Damp. Was it Rising Damp?
Yeah, it was.
You know, those people will be identified and they will not be allowed to go through a gender reassignment program. And this is what
They're taken through a different care pathway, Martin.
Okay.
It's not a case of the gate is closed or the door is closed. It's that they will be taken down a different path. And I think that's really, really important, because you can't just take away the Holy Grail, and that's what I call it. I call the whole transition my Holy Grail. You cannot just take that away just because somebody says, I am suicidal, or, I want to slit my wrist, because if you do that, you're just going to compound the issue and mm-hmm. make it even worse. You are just taken down a different route.
Okay. Well, look, your track's coming on now. One of my favourites as well from when I was a kid, Soft Cell by Tainted Love. Anything you want to say about that before I play it?
Yeah, this was the very first song that me and my then girlfriend ever danced to.
All right,
and
well.
That's why it's so special to me. It always will be.
Okay, here it is, Soft Cell, Tainted Love. Chatting off air as we always do. I you know, my audience know that I'm terrible for gassing with people. Last week with Gary King, we were getting so into the conversation, I'd have to say to him, "We're on air in 2 seconds, Gary. Where were we?" It was really difficult, but we've been quite restrained in our conversation. So now I know that some of the things that you've gone through since 2015. Have been quite horrendous, and I know that you're prepared to talk about them. So we've got 2 minutes before we go to the next set of adverts. Start us off. Tell us how things started to spiral downhill for you.
Things started to get worse and worse after my company had disbanded. They got rid of me. They pretty much left me for dead. They ended up taking my car off me as well, which to a degree, I suppose they needed it back, but it didn't help me because then I had no way of getting around. My bills got worse and worse. I was having to pay out up to £2,600 a month and actually had nothing coming in. So all of my finances disappeared. I ended up terribly, terribly in the red. And I had applied for job after job after job. I don't want to give too many secrets away because my, everything is in my book, but nobody would touch me, Martin. And it was quite clear on one occasion that it came down to my gender because I applied for the same job as Andrew and as Emma, and I got an interview as Andrew and didn't get an interview as Emma. And
oh,
I thought
okay.
That was brutal. I didn't do anything about it because actually I was in such a dark and awful, terrible place that I couldn't think straight. Desperately short of food that I decided I was going to simply have to go to the job centre and beg, literally beg for a job. And that's quite literally what I did. I went into Leyland, went to this lady and just said, "Please give me a job." And she didn't give me a job. What she did is she sent me round to a church, which I didn't know where I was going. But when I turned up there, it was the Church of England Food Bank. And quite honestly, that was the worst day of my entire life. It was truly, truly awful to think that I was having to take 2 bags of food from a lady of the church just so I could feed my children that weekend. Sorry.
So, me and Emma have been talking, you know, if you were listening earlier on, you'll hear, you know, it's difficult for her, and, you know, you never know, she might still struggle with her emotions, because she's been through a very hard time. So, Emma's going to be talking to us about how that day in the food bank changed her life, and I know the story already before she shares it with you, but it resonated, what she said resonated with me. It's like we've got different rungs in our society, haven't we? And it seems to be something wrong, really, when depending on the rung that you're on, isn't the difference between whether or not you drive a Mercedes-Benz or a 2009 Vectra. The difference is whether or not you can be clean, have a roof over your head and eat. And it seems to me there's something wrong with society there. And I'm going to share something with you. Emma can hear me, so I'm sharing it with her as well. Over the Christmas period, I came out of my house with my little boy and he said, "Dad, there's somebody over there sitting in the road." And I looked over and there was a woman sitting on the edge of the curb. And it was very easy to look at her and assume that she was some kind of drunk, actually, or drug addict. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Everything about it, the way she was sitting, she was hunched over. And I went over to her and it turned out that she had MS. She used to be married, She had a good job. She got MS. And within a period of just a few years, her life deteriorated to the point that, you know, she was just struggling. I had to take, I took her to her house anyway with my son. And I think that was as much of a lesson for him that in today's society, if you get something like that, you're stuffed. Emma, I've never been to a food bank. A lot of people haven't. Described the process to us.
Well, there's nothing unpleasant about it, Martin. It's not like it's like loads and loads of seedy people all lined up or anything like that. And in fact, to a degree, it's quite the opposite. The people there, they're more often volunteers, I believe. I've not looked into it, but I believe that's the case. And they are there to help you. And basically, I think it's a lot of people in various different places just donate food. You know, you might buy it as you're going around in your supermarket and you put it in a basket, it gets passed on. And on this particular day, I went to the front doors of this place and knocked on the door. The door opens, a lovely lady just there. She said, "Oh, I believe you are such a..." "Yes, I am, yeah." "Right, we've got something for you." And she handed over two very, very full bags of food. And I just broke down. It was just horrendous. And that day, Martin, changed my life, because these were people doing it for others, just out of the goodness of the heart. But what they were doing was helping me to survive another day. And actually, the bit that changed my entire life, and I never looked back from that day, was when I turned around and Mrs. dear, dear old lady, she must have been, I don't know, anywhere between 75 and 85, and she was dressed in a huge thick coat, middle of summer, she had a pair of slippers on, ever so old, ever so fresh. She clearly lived on the street, and she was in need of food. And all I could think, Martin, was, "Oh my goodness, there is no difference in this second in time between me and this dear old lady." And I didn't feel sorry for her. I felt sad for her situation, but I just thought, I am never coming back here ever again. I have got to get my life in order. And the food bank, do you know what? Praise the people who work for the food bank forever and a day, Martin. They do an amazing job.
Okay, so I get where you're coming from there. That was a turnaround moment where you said, right. But I also know that things didn't necessarily get any easier for you just because you'd made that decision. Do you want to share with our audience what you shared with me earlier on about some of the ideas that you contemplated? Because you were looking for work, weren't you, and you couldn't get work.
Yeah, I was looking for work, but I have to tell you that although things didn't immediately get better, things immediately didn't turn round, that's what I'll say. Things did start to get a little better because I started thinking more positive, Martin, and I started believing that things might happen. Whether they did or didn't wasn't the point. It was that I changed my mindset at that time. So the first thing that happened just after that was that one of my dear friends actually rung me and offered me a job. But before then, let me tell you that things were so bad. It was so bad that I even contemplated robbery and theft. Fortunately, I never did do, and I'm thankful to any God that anybody worships that I never went down that route. But I'll tell you now, Martin, I wasn't that far off. I really wasn't. Because I could see no light at the end of the tunnel. All I could see was just horrors. And no matter where I looked and no matter which direction I turned, people were not forgiving me a break. Where in my previous life, on the other side of the fence, in the male world, I never had a problem. And I can only put it down to one thing, and that is that people wouldn't touch me with a barge pole. And that's very sad, don't you think?
Yeah, because, you know, I hate to say this, but for anybody who doesn't understand this expression of white privilege or male privilege. There it is. It's very, very clear. You'd lost your privilege. You lost your male privilege, but you also lost the privilege that we all get when we fit in and do what society expects to us, of us.
Yeah, and it's, but you know what? You know what, Martin? To me, and this is what I stand up for now, so I'm jumping ahead to jump back very quickly, is I was still a human being. I was still me. You know, just because my outward appearance was different, and may I say I think I looked a lot better, but my outward appearance was different. I was still a human being, and I deserved to be treated like a human. But because of other people's perceptions of how I might have been perceived in their working establishment, I was overlooked, and I think that is brutal, really brutal.
It is brutal, and that's why I do what I do. You know, I hope that you speaking today about your experience so far, out of a million people, there's got to be some people out there that maybe are not living the life that they should be living. They're not afraid to come out and say how they're feeling. So if that's you now listening to this show, it is difficult. But certainly in Emma Preston's case, the light does come at the end of the tunnel. Because, you know, you're only going to be here once. Certainly in this form, no matter what your religious faith is, you know, here now, physically, this is who you are. So be the person that you should be. So, fortunately, you didn't go down that path. You didn't rob any banks. No. You didn't do any, you know...
I also didn't end up committing suicide, which is pretty obvious because I'm talking to you now. But I did start the attempt, Martin.
Yeah.
And that was immediately, as in that afternoon, following going to the food bank because I was beyond. In fact, you know what? There's an interesting thing, Martin, where you can be terribly depressed in life, and we all say, "Oh, I'm depressed today." Actually, depression is a truly terrible, terrible thing, and I never understood it at the time. And that afternoon, I was ready to end it all, but you know, I was very, very calm about it, Martin. And I just didn't feel like I fitted in anymore, and I wanted any more to do with it. But fortunately, I didn't do a very good job of it, and I'm very, very glad that I didn't do a very good job of it.
It's an interesting subject. I've discussed things like that on here before. I think that once we reach a point where we've had enough of existence in its current form, yeah, there's something wrong here, sort of thing. Martin has got to go. It's actually a catalyst for change. Enough is enough.
Yes.
Because you then reach a point where everything that you're doing is a bonus. Just having a bowl of soup is like, well, I'm here to have a bowl of soup. I shouldn't even be here. That was supposed to have worked. So I think that, you know, if somebody has never reached a point in life where I'm not saying that in order to be the person you've got to be and be spiritually awake, you've got to feel suicidal. But I think that there's two ways that it can go when you do get... Well, there's three ways it can go when you're mentally ill. Either you do die, or when you're going through mental anguish, I'm sorry, in your particular case. Or you come through it on the other side, and I think you did. But in terms of what you had to do to survive, I don't want to say it if you don't want to say it, but you were talking about some of the other things that you had to do. Do you still want to share them?
Thinking since, I'd rather not just now, only because it's a major part of my book, and there's some of my family still don't know, so it's all right, Martin. No, I know what you're talking about, and it is a truly brutal, terrible part of my life. So I will touch on, I'll say this.
On what, sorry?
There are some things that we do in life, Martin, that we may not be proud of, but we do them. And we are proud of why we did them. And I can honestly say that I've touched the depths of the depths. And I'm not, look, And again, I'm now talking to your listeners more than a conversation between me and you, in that I'm not looking for sympathy. I am far from sympathy. I'll tell you right now, there's a good end to this, because I am in such a positive place now, Martin, it's untrue. And I am nowhere near financially stable. In fact, I'm about as bad as I ever have been. But I feel so positive about the future because of all these things I've gone through. But I have been through some terrible times. And when people see chapter 101 in my book, they will understand just how bad things have got. But I did things, Martin, terrible, terrible things. I did things for my wife, who will soon be my ex-wife, but I still care for her very, very deeply, and my children. Because why? Because I'll always do that, Martin, because my family will always come first. And it is truly important in life that you care for yourself as much as you care for other people. So now that I've achieved what I wanted to do and looked after my family, now I'm looking after me. So there you go.
I can hear the emotion in your voice there, Emma, and you know, it's not the end of the show, but I do want to take this opportunity to thank you for coming on, because I think you're really, really brave to do this and to come onto a radio show and to talk about this. Because really, I think that this whole thing, we often talk about authenticity. Some people don't even want to admit that they don't, you know, I'm going to be trivial here, they don't even want to admit that maybe they don't fancy their wife anymore, or they've been thinking about going and leaving the country or whatever. What I'm trying to say here is that we all have secrets. Most people have got secrets, and in some way or other, they're not living the life that they want to live.
Absolutely.
But I think that to make the step that you did is one of the bravest and probably one of the most difficult, because of the lack of understanding, because from the outside looking in, it is really extreme, you know.
Isn't it funny that you say brave and I say selfish? If I can tell you why.
Yeah.
Because, you know, every single conversation, and I have wonderful, as much as I genuinely tend to get, you know, somebody laughing or saying something in my shop about me, at least once in the morning and once in the afternoon, every single day. I do actually have so many people who want to talk to me or who want to ask about, because I go out of my way to do as glamorous a makeup as possible. You know this, and we've laughed about it. You know, I think, tell me if I'm wrong here, Martin, but I think the majority of the world is really, really nice. You know, the majority of people really care about other people. It's only a small minority, generally speaking, who don't want you to have a good life, or who just don't want to understand and therefore don't care about their fellow man and woman. And for me, I love human beings, and I love talking about things. But I tell you again, I said it about an hour ago, I do not ram transgender down anybody's throat. In fact, quite the opposite, Martin. I try to live my life without even thinking about it. It's other people that tell me. So I'm really pleased to talk about it just once and just say, this is me. This is how I am. You know what? And I care for you. Regardless, my love is fairly unconditional for my fellow humans. Does that make any sense?
It does. It does indeed, because I'm on the same page. But you know what I'm thinking? Let's give them some music. There's another 1.5 minutes of Shadow of Love by The Damned. And then we're going to go to the Azan after that. So we'll be continuing our chat at around 16:49.
Brilliant.
Okay, so really, really sorry about that. We had a technical problem, which stopped yesterday going out, so apologies for that. So, Emma, what, you know, you and I were talking about the objectives that you wanted to achieve today. And I thought what you said to me off air was really beautiful. So share with the audience what you're really hoping today.
My mission isn't, I don't stand out for transgender. I stand out for diversity, equality and inclusion. You know, I care for my fellow humans, and, you know, an awful lot of my friends are from the Asian community, where whichever spiritualist side people live on, Hindu, Muslim, etc., wherever. whatever it is. But, you know, for one thing that I want to do, we've talked about me writing my book. You know, I'm desperate for an investor so that I can get the book printed so that I can go around the events and try and sell my book. Because one of the things that I want to do, the only mission I've got in life, is that one day, Martin, somebody will write to me and say, because of the words you spoke, because of the words you wrote, I didn't commit suicide today. And that's all I want to do. You know, I don't know whether I'll sell one book or 1,000 books or 1,000,000 books. But actually, all I want to do is save a life. And I know that sounds like all this Miss World, you know, I want to open a donkey sanctuary. Actually, it's the one mission I've had since starting writing this book, because I know how dark and sinister and nasty things can get. And I don't want people to be there. I just want to do the right thing. So, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to save a life, Martin.
I think that that's really beautiful, and as he struggles to get his headphones on, I think that from my experience, since I got into coaching, since I started to shine, if you like, and invite people to come and talk to me, since I've been doing this show in the last 18 months, and since I got involved with writing, the number of people out there that have got some kind of deep story where they reached a point where they wanted to kill themselves, and these are the people that haven't died, it's quite incredible. Clearly, you know, I'm with you, Emma, when you say that you think that most people are very, very loving. By the way, my default position is that we're all born hardwired to be unconditionally loving. But unfortunately, society kind of trains us to have a selfish streak. But I think that one day we'll all be in a better place. My objective for today, like you, if there's somebody out there that one day feels stronger because they've heard your story or they've read your story, that's great. What I'm asking you to do, if you're listening right now, if before maybe you felt hostility, or would walk across the road, or if you saw somebody who was transgendered, you would not acknowledge the person that they wanted to be. If today's interview with Emma has made you feel a little bit more sympathetic, or more likely to say, hi, how are you, and to chat to that person, then from my perspective, you know, I've done my job today. But I also want to ask something. I never said to Emma, though, I was going to do this, but I know that Emma's written her book because Emma originally came to me because at that stage you were still writing it, Emma, and I'm an editor and a proofreader and all the rest of it. And I've read the first two chapters of this book, and Emma's very articulate, and I thought it was a real eye-opener when I read it. And I'm sure that there's people out there that need to read this book. Not only people who are going through what Emma's gone through in their own world, but just everyday people. This is, it's a part of life, and you know, we all need to start creating the change in ourselves that we want to see on the outside. We all want to be treated equally, so we've got to treat others more equally. So if there's anybody out there right now who wants to get in touch with Emma and maybe give her some support for the book, it could be finding the right mechanism to publish it, whatever, I want you to get in touch with her. So, Emma, how can people contact you?
I'm highly prolific on LinkedIn, and my profile gives my email address and my mobile number. And I'm more than happy for anybody to link up with me. I'm not more than happy. I'd be ecstatic for people to link up with me. And, just do it. I mean, Emma Jane Preston at yahoo.com. It's very, very easy. That's without a Y, by the way. Everybody always asks me if it's got a Y. It's without a Y. Emma Jane Preston at yahoo.com. I love making friends all over the world. And in fact, of my LinkedIn, Martin, I reckon 60% of my LinkedIn connections are actually from India all the way through to Saudi, the Far East.
Yeah. And I can vouch for Emma and say that as somebody who's very active on LinkedIn, there's never a dull moment on your page, Emma. And you're absolutely right when you say you don't bang one drum all the time. You talk about service, you talk about giving value, getting value, because it is a business platform.
I consider myself a bit of an eclectic, bubbly nutcase. You literally never know what you're going to get off me from one day to the next, quite literally.
Well, Emma, there's something that I don't know if you're aware of, by the way, because I can't remember if I actually said this to you, but since I connected with you on LinkedIn, I ended up, through one of your posts and somebody commenting, actually connecting with a guy who used to sit in class with me in our school in Liverpool. I was quite lucky. I went to quite a well-to-do school. I had to do three separate exams outside of 11 plus to get in. So the government paid for a scholarship for me to go to this school. And he was there. There was some real lunatics there though, I've got to admit, but that's a different story. He was a good guy. So Emma, we're coming to the end. I want to thank you very much for coming on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
And do you want to say any parting words for our audience?
I just want to say thank you so much for listening. I hope I haven't rammed the subject of transgender down people's throats. That was never my intention. I just wanted to share some experiences and just say hi.
We're out of time, Emma. We're out of time. Okay. Thank you for listening today. I was premature there for once. We weren't out of time. I do apologise, Emma. We'll be back next week when I believe we'll be playing the interview that I'm doing on Thursday with Gina Miller. So that's the Culture Pot next Sunday from 3 to 5. Thank you very much.
A boy just south of Mobile, gave him a ride, filled him with a hot meal. I was 16, he was 21. Rode with us to Memphis, and Papa would have shot him if he knew what he'd done.
Transmitting to planet Earth on 107.9 FM, DAB in Manchester, Glasgow and Birmingham. Online at radiosangam.co.uk and via our app. The only Asian music station you need. This is Radio Sangam. Radio Sangam, in association with Haji Jewellers, 68 Hotwood Lane, Halifax, HX1 4DG. Providers of gold and silver jewellery for all occasions. Call Halifax 01.